was a cold silence that we don't dare speak. There's a wall between us and a river so deep. We keep pretending that there's nothing wrong. There's a cold of silence and it can't go on.
Hi folks, I am Alan Watt and this is Cutting Through the Matrix on May the 6th, 2009. I always advise the newcomers to look into cuttingthroughthematrix.com because on that website you'd find hundreds of hours of talks I've given in the past where I've tried to show you the histories that lead up to the present time, the histories of the foundations and the organizers, those with money, power and influence, and how basically, they shape the future always. They predict the future and they make it happen. They bring in the future which they plan. And we're simply living through a script generation by generation. And I use the documentation to prove my points written by many of the elitists themselves and those in the big foundations, those who are on the world stage. They call them actors on the world stage. At the United Nations, actually call them actors. And they are actors because most of them are just frontmen who've been picked and trained for their positions. And they're told what to say and what to do while they're in power. That goes for politicians too. That way, of course, you can always command the future when you always make sure that all the top boys in every country, presidents, prime ministers, are trained for the particular part, the part they will play in their term. That's as simple as it can be. And that's how it really, really is. And the older you get, the more you see the blurring of faces and names, because technically they are irrelevant. It's only important that we believe that they're all very, very real and very, very individualistic, and they're nothing of the kind, because it doesn't matter which party you vote for. As Professor Carl Quigley said back in the 1960s in his own book, Tragedy and Hope, and his other one, The Anglo-American Establishment, both must read. He says we always have the top people in all parties. And he said then, too, this parallel government had already been running the United States for 60 years, and, of course, Britain for an awful lot longer. Therefore, cuttingthroughthematrix.com is a website to go into for details and the histories of this big organization, this world organization now. And you can also help keep me going by donating to me. This site, the PayPal buttons are on the site. You can send personal checks from the US and Canada or Western Union from abroad, although that's kind of expensive. And you can also look into alanwattsentinel.eu for transcripts of these talks, which you can download for print up, written in various languages of Europe. And those who simply get the disc burned and passed around because they're not on computer, I always say I don't blame them. My name is Alan Watt. You can write to me at Site 41, Box 4, Estaire, which is Estaire, Ontario, Canada. The postal code is P as in Peter, 3, E as in Elizabeth, 4, N for Nora, 1. And boy, what a roll we're on. You know, I used to read a lot of philosophers' books to get an idea of, because you see, the big institutions and government too, the big think tanks, they pull in the resident philosophers. I always have philosophers, special ones that they bring in from the top universities to advise them on really what it is, its formula. Because like Plato said, he said people work on formula. Anything that you've made people do in the past, any time in the past, even ancient times, if you understand the formula and present it the same way again, that people will behave just the same way, adapt to it. If it's worked before, it will work again. And it's true. It's true. We work on formulas. We're run by scientific socialism on behalf of the fascists. Back with more after these messages.
This is RBN, The Republic Broadcasting Network.
Hi, folks. I'm Alan Watt. We're cutting through the matrix and talking about how philosophers are used by the big think tanks to come in and give them histories, past histories. They always use history to see how people behaved and how they reacted to certain changes. And they wanted to know the formulas of how those changes were implemented on a public, but then go along with it. Of course, they studied religions, and religions have always been the best method, really, for controlling people, making them behave specifically for really a tyrant type system, a totalitarian system. And for example of that, just look at the feudal system across Europe, where you had a king at the top of every country, you had his overlords, and then you had the, all the way down to the lords and barons, and then you had the peasantry that were bought and sold with the land. They were really slaves. They were called serfs. It sounds better in the history books than slaves. But that's what they were slaves. And all produce was made by the slaves. Any excess, meaning most of it, was taken by the lords and passed upwards, and other stuff was exported by the guys at the top on behalf of the king. And that was the old commerce. But again, the churches themselves were always on the side of the kings. So they understand how populations accept authority and how we react to frightening news like wars or someone's going to invade us from over there. That was used for century after century after century with amazing propaganda, even in olden times. So much so in the Middle Ages, that when Britain was at war with France, one of the many wars with France, because that was always their best bet. You know, they had this thing going between France and England, and both populations were kept in check and keep taxes coming in to save them and all that kind of stuff. So that this little deal worked out between the British monarchy and the French monarchy. And at one time, a ship was shipwrecked on the coast of England, and the peasants, the serfs, actually hung two monkeys, thinking that these were Frenchmen. That's how good propaganda was back then. They couldn't read or write. There was no TV. I just heard these stories about these monstrous French people. And we go on from there and we look at the World War II posters from about the Japanese. And every World War II poster for propaganda purposes in the US and Britain had this picture of this guy with the little slit eyes and kind of rabbit teeth. And that's the standard portrayal of a Japanese person. Always dehumanize your enemy. It works in every time. And of course, at the moment, you've got militaries abroad there who get into the swing. In fact, the youngsters are taught that they're ragheads. You call them ragheads, you see, as you dehumanize them. And they're just dying to put that uniform on rather than just play video games and go over and actually kill ragheads, as they call them. And that's accepted in the military, that kind of terminology. Always dehumanize the enemy. But getting back to philosophers and so on, well, Jack Z. Lowell, who was quite a deep thinker, and he could certainly lose a lot of people in some of his books, went into the whole thing about, well, what are you and what do you want? And he said, in every generation, you'll want what everyone else wants in that generation, because it's all promoted to you. That becomes your wants. You'll actually think your needs, because everyone else will have what you want. So you've got to have it too. We're all run by commerce, and I've gone through the histories of Bernays and all the big marketing boys. He used the psychoanalytical techniques to control and to make whole populations do things and want things and wear things and even behave in a certain manner. And they can do it perfectly in every era. That's why they hate individuality. And I've gone into the whole Fabian system, how the world would be taken over with branches of the Royal Institute for International Affairs, Council on Foreign Relations, same thing, and its various Far Eastern Pacific Rim groups it had. As they bring up this global system, bring it together, and how they created a United Nations first and then a United Nations, all with the same agenda, both with the same agenda, one transformed into the other, And when you tell people their plans, they can't believe you, because all they've been taught about the United Nations is how wonderful it is as it goes in to help feed the hungry, like some big charity. And it's nothing of the kind. That's not what it's about. It's a front organization that works on behalf of the big foundations that set up the United Nations, like the Royal Institute of International Affairs, like the Rockefeller Foundation. In fact, Mr. Rockefeller gave the UN the land to build the UN buildings on in New York. It used to be the largest kosher slaughterhouse in the area. So it's been well consecrated for its task. And when you tell people that one of the prime reasons of the United Nations is to basically depopulate the world, they can't believe you. They can't put together the propaganda images of the people being fed by them across the world with depopulation. But of course, they're too lazy to go into all the different foundations and umbrella groups under the United Nations to see that most of them are actually into population control and what they call family planning or women's health. It's all the same thing. Many different names for the same thing. And it's really took off after Kissinger put out that particular dictum back in the 70s to do with depopulation and the fact that he claimed on behalf of his masters, of course, those who he worked for, that the greatest threat to the state and the world was overpopulation. And then they really went into action. Here's an article here. It's from BNet, BNet, from 1994. And it says, Cairo Conference, this is one of the many UN conferences, Cairo Conference reaches consensus on plan to stabilize world growth by 2015. Did you know about that? International Conference on Population and Development. See, they always mix a good word with another word. It sounds pretty good. Population is all right. Development's okay. Includes related article on United Nations studies on urbanization. It says, against the backdrop, streaked with controversy under the intense spotlight of unprecedented world media attention, the International Conference on Population and Development reached consensus. Remember, it really means population reduction. Despite some widely divergent viewpoints on a worldwide strategy to curb global population growth over the next 20 years and achieve sustained economic growth and sustainable development. Sustainable development is it's like weapons of mass destruction. They parrot and parrot and parrot it until the people parrot it without realizing what they're actually saying. Sustainable development. At the heart of the work of the conference, the fifth United Nations Global Meeting on Population Issues was, in the words of UN Secretary General Boutros-Ghali, so great they name him twice, the search for an equilibrium between humanity and its environment and, ultimately, the means to sustain life on Earth. In that light, he felt the widespread public attention to the controversial issues debated at the conference was essentially encouraging, since it helped raise consciousness. You know, they call it raising consciousness or public awareness, meaning propagandizing the public without them realizing it, of important issues and mobilize public opinion into significant action. Such critical matters could not be considered without causing ripples and even some storms, he said. Convened in Cairo, Egypt, from the 5th to 13th of December, the conference adopted without a vote a 16-chapter program of action, calling for action to stabilize world population growth at below estimates of 7.5 billion by the year 2015 in the context of sustainable development. So now you really know what sustainable development means. Population reduction. Reduction. In its preamble, now they go through all these legalities because every great charter has got a preamble, and that's where you'll find all the nitty-gritty stuff, and the terms they use, and the meanings of the terms they use. You've got to know their meanings. It says the program states that the conference represented the last opportunity in the 20th century to collectively address the critical challenges and interrelationships between population and development. The program of action, according to Dr. Nafis Sadiq, executive director of the UN Population Fund, there you are, the United Nations Population Fund, and conference secretary general, had the potential to change the world. They had delegations from more than 180 countries. Did you know about that? You sent a delegation off, which included a number of heads of states of government, and were joined at the conference by thousands of participants from non-governmental and other so-called grassroots organizations. Thousands of them, all paid by who? The big foundations that they work for. So a handful of the real ones, the real foundations that fund all the other ones. You know who they are. It says, and intergovernmental bodies. What's an intergovernmental body? Well, these are the NGOs, non-governmental organizations, that now have official status as an institution belonging to your government, people that you don't vote for. And the media, an indication of the importance attached by the people of the world to a meeting convened for the people of the world. They had four previous UN population conferences. Now, they just don't go there and talk. They make agendas, remember, and they make them work. They put them into practice. The first one was in Rome, 1954, Belgrade, 65, Bucharest, 74, and Mexico City in 1984. The first World Population Plan of Action was adopted in 1974 and was reviewed and supplemented at the 1984 conference by a set of recommendations for its further implementation. What do you think implementation means? Mindful of the need to continue to consider population issues at high level, the UN Economic and Social Council in July 89 called for the convening of an international conference on population. The General Assembly in 1992 and 93 stressed the need for comprehensive national population policies, which are all breaking out in the paper now about being must reduce the internal populations of countries. I'll be back with more of this after these messages.
This is Cascadia Public Radio.
I'm Alan Watts. We're cutting through the matrix, just showing you that big international meetings take place, well-funded, heads of state attend it, and relevant departments of government attend it. And yet, people think it doesn't concern them. Now I'm talking about population reduction. And even in this article, Boutros-Ghali, or as you like to prefer it, Boutros-Ghali, he said himself that they couldn't rely, this is the term, on some kind of law of nature to allow wars, disasters, famine, or disease to regulate the world's demographic growth. In other words, that's not enough. You couldn't rely on it. I mean, that's a good thing, according to them. And that's true. In their own writings, they say that. Wars, disasters, famine, or disease to regulate the world's demographic growth. So they must implement policies, governmental policies internationally, and make them work. For those who wonder why the Western world is experiencing infertility since the 1950s, maybe the penny will drop. And I've gone through the bisphenol A and all the other stuff that put in your food, in your water bottles, line the baby's food cans with, and so on and so on. And I've given the links to the CBC documentary on the disappearing male to do with the fact they knew about this stuff back in the 1800s and what it would do to the fetus in the womb, especially if it was a male. But you'll still think it's all coincidence, and they won't make a big deal of it on the television box. So it doesn't really matter to you, does it? But that's really what the UN is about, is to be a world front government that does undemocratically, remember, of what the big boys want, because it's not a democratic institution. And the world they're bringing in is to be one of regulation. Remember what Huxley said, who was a member of all these various organizations? Aldo and Julian Huxley. They said the world they'd bring in would be a form of scientific dictatorship, where the experts would guide and rule over the people and have policies enacted by government departments. Well, that's what we're living through. We saw act, that was the setup, the physical setup to for what was to come. It didn't matter if Bush stayed in office or not. They already had Obama lined up to come in and take over. Now the machinery was set up for control internally. The same with Blair in Britain, and Brown takes over from him. And they go into the next part of it, which is completely internationalized, an internationalized system of totalitarianism, basically. Because, you see, the peasants at the bottom are just so dumb and stupid they can't rule themselves. That's what the big boys have always said. Therefore, it must be done for us and by those at the top using force and intimidation. Here's an article here from the Virgin Media. It's from May the 6th today. Post office ID card roll discussed. I mentioned yesterday the pilots are getting the first ones to be forced to take new ID cards. But here it goes into the public, you see. Post offices and pharmacies. And pharmacies, you see, pharma is a big part of this control mechanism because, you see, big pharmas, the biggest pharmas are owned by the same international bankers. Remember that the Rothschilds are only one family who have two or three big pharma companies under their belt, the first one being Bayer. It says post offices and pharmacies. Remember, they're going to drug the public if they're not already doing it. They have been doing it, in fact. Post offices and pharmacies could act as enrollment centres for the government's ID card scheme, Home Secretary Jackie Smith has said. This is the front woman for Britain, for their homeland security stuff. Anyone who wants an identity card or biometric passport will go to their local post office or pharmacy to have their fingerprints read and stored along with a face scan. Now, I mentioned yesterday how we pay for our chains. The card will cost £30 for the public, and the shops will charge another £30 to collect the data. There's £60, which will be stored on a government database. So post offices and pharmaceutical companies are working for the government. Simple as that. They're going to use one Manchester to get the ID across to the public. We get used to things through familiarization. As you boil the frog. Victor Manchester has been chosen as a launch area for the £5 million scheme, with thousands of cards likely to be printed from this autumn. Anyone who wants a card can sign up for information alerts at Direct Government UK. Ms. Smith is meeting post office managers and pharmacy trade groups to discuss the plans. It's amazing, down through history, when you go into who owned the money systems, the gold, in the trading routes, etc. They call them merchant bankers in those days because they owned the merchant lanes for traffic. They owned the ships and the systems for transporting all of the stuff. They owned the insurance companies too, though they are insurance companies. They owned them as well. Everything was rigged. But they also owned, all down through time, always owned what you can call pharma, the pharma industry, the drug industry, from even in the days of Egypt. It says here, the company's interest in working with us to deliver the service will play a key role in ensuring the public can apply for an ID card or passport simply and easily, she said. While private companies will clearly benefit from the increased footfall from offering the service, their customers will benefit from being able to quickly provide the biometrics while they're out doing their shopping. Isn't that nice? What's so convenient? Ho, ho, ho. Back with more after these messages.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.
I am Alan Watts. We're cutting through the matrix. Just discussing how the ID cards are being introduced in Britain, and it'll be the same everywhere else. Because everything happens from Britain, spreads out so quickly now. Now that we're all in it together, as they say, we're all in it together, one of the favourite slogans of world wars. But that's how they're introducing it to the public, and you'll pay for it. It's strange that, you see, if they make it free, you're kind of suspicious pay for it, you think, well, I'm just sort of in control. It's mine. Even all your data is for the government. And these idiots will go into the local pharmacies or post offices where the people who work there live amongst them and give all their data. But never thinking, that's how gullible people are today. I've had people in lines in checkout counters being asked by the tellers for personal info, and they just parrot it off. They're so used to it, think nothing of it. Everybody's sitting listening. Standing around listening to them, yeah. Last night is funny because I was thinking about how Bernays brought in American culture. Not just him, remember. He was maybe the top of the tree at one point. And his nephew now is still running Britain. And they're all related to the various top psychiatrists that came out to change the world and promoted from the top, like Freud. But I was thinking of one thing I saw to do with McDonald's. McDonald's, the fast food mush stuff that they sell. And how in the 60s and 70s, parents were sending off their children to these holiday camps for McDonald's and different ones too. And you saw the children, like 200 of them, sitting, parting off the songs for McDonald's, being taught them. Do you realize that that's them bringing up customers for life? Total conditioning at 5 and 6 years of age. I couldn't believe it. That number one, the parents had been that brainwashed to allow it. And I thought it's a marketer's dream where they can get a hold of the children and brainwash them to eat this horrible goo. And, of course, it makes perfect sense because the marketing systems are part of government, according to Lord Bertrand Russell, who said they were bringing them on board, Madison Avenue on board, in the 1950s, actually in the 40s. But they did bring them in the 50s big time. And the press, as I've always said, has been compliant. And this little article, before I go to the phone calls, here's a little article here about how the press is complaining now. The press that kept us all in the dark, because they're also an essential arm of government to give us a reality. And it's from The Independent. This article's from the 4th of May, 2009. The many-headed Hydra serpent that threatens freedoms of the press. The British news media has never been so restricted, beset by the laws of an authoritarian government, greedy lawyers, well, there's nothing new in the lawyers, and dwindling editorial budgets, according to one of the industry's most important representative bodies. The Society of Editors has submitted a dossier of evidence to Jack Straw, the Justice Secretary, claiming that meritorious articles by local newspapers are increasingly being suppressed because of the danger that legal action would bring ruinous costs. Then it goes on to all the different things that they can't talk about anymore. So that's them complaining, basically. But the same media that's kept us in trivia, utter trivia, for many, many decades, is complaining. So it's quite a joke, isn't it? Now we'll go to the phones now, and we've got Amber from Victoria there. Are you there, Amber?
Hello.
Hello.
Hey, Alan. How are you?
How are you doing?
Pretty good. Have you been getting the rain out there, too?
Yes. I got heavily sprayed. This is like last year, where last year they spray heavily in the morning. It would turn to that eggshell white mush, and then it would start raining.
Yeah.
That's what I've been getting here. Yeah.
Exactly, yeah. That's actually why I called them. I've been noticing kind of a pattern.
Mm-hmm.
Lately, I heard one of your other callers talk about it too, Rachel. You're saying that it was like spraying and spraying and spraying for days in a row.
Yes.
And then it rains.
That's right.
And it's like I wake up in the morning and it's sunny. I see the sun. And they start spraying.
Yeah.
And spraying and spraying. And after a while, you can't even see the trails anymore because it's just so white already.
Yes.
And it's just like a haze. And then it blocks out the sun.
It blocks out the sun. It's like an eggshell of white.
Yeah, it's
you don't
just
see the pineapple clouds anywhere. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I've never seen anything like that before. Well, not in the past.
Mm-hmm.
Just now.
But that's how bad it is. I mean, the public have no idea what's already been done to them and is being done to them. They're into their iPods and their text messaging, and they stare at the ground, and they're quite happy, most of them.
Yeah, yeah. I try to provoke them to look up when I'm walking. Just try to catch someone's eye and try to get them to do what you do. But what you said about international totalitarianism is quite true.
Yeah.
The way that we're all set up, it's also different, you know, from country to country, continent to continent, that the way that we are controlled.
Yes, in fact, I read articles, and I have some more here, to do with the military. They go into different countries. They also bring in different anthropologists, specialists with ethnic groups, religions. They bring them in so they can study and use their own cultures against them and how to actually alter their culture by using their cultural thinking.
Yeah, and then, you know, when one culture can look at another culture and say, well, you know, they've got it okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Like, we're just as controlled as them.
We're more so.
It's just in a different way. Like, it's just
it's actually more so because they keep telling us we're free.
Yeah, it's like it's like a card trick. It's like a David Blaine of a, just a thin illusion of that we do have a choice.
Yeah.
You know, like, I am stuck in this 9-to-5, whatever, world. But, you know, I could get out if I wanted to, or I could do this.
Yeah.
If I wanted to.
And what you find is you basically maybe up to 5 choices, but it's all confined within an area. And this is how everyone is. You have really about 5 choices, and they're really laid out for you. You're only allowed to move within those about 5 choices.
Yeah.
That's what they give you.
Yeah.
That's right. Mind you, they tell you in all movies that anyone can become president.
Right, yeah. I'm still
what
thinking
a joke,
about
yeah.
it. Yeah. And the population control, like the fact that it's not, people should be outraged at the fact that anybody's even talking about it. Like,
yeah.
Why is there studies and why, you know, why is somebody else deciding if it's okay if, like, for me to live or...
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, and the reason they don't think
we
about
all
it
have
is
the right.
Because, you see, they've all had about 20-odd years or more of wildlife indoctrination where they slip all this stuff in and you're left, really, with a formula in your head. You haven't reasoned through it, but you think... Well, I guess they're right. There's too many people and there's endangering wildlife. There's too many of us. And again, through dehumanization, and that's the technique that's been used heavily through media, through movies, is dehumanization until we don't have the respect for life anymore. And we don't respect life. It doesn't matter what they target. They always target something to create controversy because all publicity is good publicity for them. And once you devalue the baby's life, then you go into the elderly's life. That's already happened, both of them. And then you start going for the middle group. And we accept it now. We've come to believe they're right. There's too many of us. And it's all through indoctrination, intergenerational propaganda. They can make us believe anything. But we don't stop and think, well, wait a minute now. The elite themselves have said that they will survive. They will still have families because they have the right to do so, being superior. And they say that in their own writings.
Mm-hmm.
So until people realize they are no more superior or have no more rights than anyone else, then nothing will happen or continue.
Absolutely.
That's it. But thanks for calling in. Yeah.
Thank you.
And stay out with the clouds there. Yeah. If you can. Now we'll go to Todd from Florida. Are you there, Todd?
Hello?
Hello.
Hey, Alan, can you hear me?
Yes, go ahead.
Thanks for taking my call. I have a couple quick questions, if I may. Number one is, a couple days ago, I was looking at the local newspaper here. I do so on occasion just to look at the propaganda that people are being fed. And I'm in a very rural country area, and apparently they just opened 10 new FEMA centers within about a 200-mile area east-west in the rural area that I'm in.
Mm-hmm.
And that seems very extreme to me.
Yes.
And their excuse for opening these 10 FEMA centers is some thunderstorms that we had back in March.
Mm-hmm.
So in the past 6 weeks approximately, all of these centers have opened.
Yes.
And I just wondered if you could comment on that. I mean,
mm-hmm.
that seems like a kind of a really big sign that something is coming quick around the corner. You know what I mean?
It is coming down. Britain's doing the same. They're opening, I think, 7 what they call Titan jails, also emergency camps across Britain at the same time. And they are going to use weather warfare. They're already using weather warfare, and the public don't know it's been going on for years. And they will definitely, on the coastal areas, start to hammer them eventually if there's more crisis. Because if you look at the United Nations plans for the human habitat areas, they've said they don't want people around the coast of countries. They haven't said why they don't want them around the coastal regions, but they don't want them around the coastal regions. And one way or another, they're going to start to force them out. And weather warfare is a perfect technique because they can do it very, very meticulously now. It's not difficult. It's not rough. It's very precise. And I'm sure that will come. But it's also come with do with the upcoming riots in certain populations in certain areas for the future, because they expect these riots to break out about 2010, 2012, according to their own think tanks and the military. So they're getting everything prepared in advance. It's as simple as that. Simple as that, yeah.
Yeah, I guess it shouldn't surprise me. It just seems pretty absurd.
Yes.
But everything else that's going on is pretty absurd. Can I ask one more quick question?
Yeah. Go ahead.
I wanted to ask about a possible, or just get your take on a solution to everything that's going on. Do you think that if a few, I hate to put a number on it, but maybe a few million people around the world would become more self-sufficient, like you always talk about individuality?
Yeah.
And if we would, you know, grow our own food and dig a well and have our own water supply, things like that, would that cause any ripples? Would that cause any problems for the agenda?
No. I tell you, it wouldn't. All you can do is do those things for yourself as we are allowed to, because we know from their own plans they're going to eventually take over all water supply, all growing of all foodstuffs, because in their interdependent world, you will not be allowed to be independent in any one area for life. It means you're going to be totally dependent on their system. So they're going to take all of those rights away from you. And remember, too, in Agenda 21, there'll be no private property allowed eventually. And that's a simple thing today with the economic crisis and then upping the taxations on property taxes, plus persecuting people because they have a bent downpipe or something like that, or claiming they're in a watershed. They can put you under in no time at all. So all we can do is use the free time that we have to sustain ourselves as we live. But eventually, I'm afraid they're already moving to take all those rights away from us now.
Yeah, I'm taking steps to become more self-sufficient myself, but I guess
you certainly will be healthier. If you're growing your own food, there's no doubt that you're going to feel and be a lot healthier.
Yeah, that's true. Well, Alan, thanks for taking my call and for answering my questions. Have a good night.
And you too. Thanks for calling. And there's Mark from Wisconsin. Are you there, Mark?
Yeah, Alan, I work in a small town from time to time. You drive into town, you know there's a Masonic sign on the borders
yes.
of each side of the town. They ripped out the middle of town, put in a traffic circle, put a phallus in the middle of the traffic circle,
uh-huh.
and in anticipation of people being annoyed about their streets being torn up, they put on the construction signs, "We're all in this together."
Yep. I don't know if you saw the movie Brazil. Future society. In the movie, you'll see that sign everywhere. We're all in it together. Yeah.
It's kind of funny. Hey, I want to tell you, when I went in to vote for president, I put you down for president.
Oh, there you go.
I wrote you in for president there, Alan. I hope you're not upset I made your VP Mickey Mouse.
Well, I think Obama was a president by being the first foreigner to be allowed in as president, so I guess I'll be the president.
Yeah. You don't need a birth certificate, Alan. Come on.
Well, we're all one now, you know. We're all global.
Well, yeah. And then I'm walking out of the polls, Alan, and I'm not kidding you. I just about trip over this table, and it's full of syringes.
Yeah.
So you can get your vaccines that lower your IQ by 5% and vote on a fake voting machine. I literally live in Orwellville.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's becoming incredible. But they have conditioned the public so perfectly. who, honestly, they go through their entire lives never having an original thought about anything. I'm not kidding.
Yeah. Hey, I wanted to tell you this quick story. I heard one of these more militant guys on Patriot Radio saying that he graduated in his class 13th out of 33, and he said it twice, so I figured it was Masonic code. Yeah. Anyway, his name keeps popping up on the ADL list of huge anti-Semitics, and people don't know that the ADL is Masonically chartered, too, so they're batting this back and forth until they can get their hate laws installed.
That's right. The B'nai B'rith got their charter from the Royal the Scottish Rite of Freemasonry. That's who granted the B'nai B'rith their charter, so you're quite right. And all their office towers are put down, you'll notice, in the phone books as lodges.
Right, right. Sometime, could you go over on how they radicalize certain sects and nations? Because I understand Columbia University was writing textbooks for children that would measure the distance between a sniper and an infidel. Do you know anything about that?
Yes, I haven't heard that, but I know it's in a lot of video games now, an awful lot of video games, blatantly. And I'm not surprised they're doing that.
Are you interested in growing a garden this year? I started heirloom seed website, and I wondered if you wanted a garden this year. I could send you some seeds if you want.
I certainly, if I can get it dried out. See, last year they gave me rain. I'm not kidding. Spring in the morning, rain for the rest of the afternoon and day. Every single day, June and July, it had the same formula. Spray in the morning, rain, and the ground was so soaking, even the blueberries just turned to mush eventually.
Oh, my
this
gosh.
Year, I hope. I was thinking of asking the Air Force if they would give me a break. I'm trying to get the gardening this year because I've got a cultivator ready and the whole thing, yeah.
I'm surprised the weathermen don't have to call the Air Force to find out what the weather is going to be.
Oh, well, I'm sure some of them get their orders from the Air Force now, yeah. Yeah.
All right, then. Keep up the good work. Talk to you later.
Thank you,
bye-bye.
Bye. And here's the break coming up, so I'll take Antonio after these messages.
This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.
This is Alan Watts, and we're cutting through the matrix, going to Antonio from Toronto. Are you there, Antonio?
Hello?
Yes.
Good evening, Alan. My name is Antonio. First, I want to say thank you for having the courage to be out there and educating and informing me and waking me up. But I guess an observation is it feels pretty, what's the word I'm looking for, hopeless when so many people are just walking around wounded, stuck, and not being able to wake them up even when you put information in front of them.
That's what Brzezinski said. See, Brzezinski, remember, wasn't a genius and knew all this by himself. He was relying upon governmental studies taking over decades on population control of the mind, basically. He worked for NASA. He worked for the NSA. He had all access to all these departments. And in his own book, he said this, that the public truly will be unable to reason for themselves shortly. They'll only be able to believe what's told to them by mainstream media, their favorite talking heads. And so you're quite right. So you go up armed with the information that's legitimate, etc., but you get that stupefied look. They're just not interested. But they would immediately start parroting about the same topics if Mr. Mansbridge came on Canada and told them the same thing. They'd believe it and start talking about it then. That's how it works.
I know, and even within my family, my friends, even when I present information, I really feel hopeless. And the scary part is I can see the hand about to close tightly with this whole flu incident.
Yeah.
I see them spraying like animals. It's just crazy lately, and it's just too funny. I've asked people, do you look up? No. Chemtrails? What's that? It is just sad. I guess a question I have is parents, one of your previous caller, I mean, I too am, have been gaining supplies and trying to looking at living on my own and supplying and sustaining myself. But I guess the question is, being in Ontario, any particular area that you think would be the least before they sort of take over that area?
Yeah, have to always look into to what's planned for an area. If you go to, actually, the only way you'll know if what's planned for an area is to go to, generally it's the Shriners who deal with, they know all the planning for the next 20 years because they all have hands in it. And they're the guys to ask what's planned for a particular area that you plan to move into, rent or work the land or even buy a bit of land. They'll tell you.
Got it.
Yeah.
Thank
That's
you
how it works. That's how it really works in the real world, yeah.
I know. I've been using their own system to get the information I need. You're right.
Yes.
It's true. It's true. I mean, and they're so compartmentalized, they don't even know they're doing you the favor.
Yeah, I know. But that's how it really is. That's why they have these boards across every, the beginning of every town in Canada or village even, and that tells you who rules your school board, your local council, your planning departments.
Yes.
All of those Masonic symbols there, that's who does your voting polls. It's always Eastern Star Ladies with little badges behind it. Yes.
I know. I've been doing research and I look and I just can't believe they truly do have their tentacles in every pot of society everywhere.
That's right. It's like Stalin said. He said, I don't care who votes for whom. He says, I only care who counts the votes.
That's it.
And that's really how it is. But don't let that stop you. You must look after yourself first and do what's right for yourself.
I do, and thank you again. And you're still in my prayers. God bless.
And take care of yourself.
Thank you. You too.
Well, that's it for tonight. Night from Hamish and myself in a very heavily sprayed Ontario, Canada. It's good night, and may your God or your gods go with you.